certainly happy for your presence this morning. It's good to see all out who are able to be out. We have been studying a series of lessons, when it's been my turn, concerning the remnant. And the term remnant is used by the prophets in the Old Testament to identify God's faithful people. The fact is that God's faithful people were not a segregated society. That is, in one sense, the nation of Israel was kept to keep themselves separate from the nations around them. But God's people were not the physical nation of Israel. They were the spiritual faithful within that nation of Israel. So they were always surrounded by their fellow Israelites, who were not faithful to God. And that nation was surrounded by nations who were not serving God. After they were carried away into captivity, they were distributed through the population of the nations that surrounded them. And while in one sense, and we even talked about earlier this morning, they were God's chosen people, not all of them were God's servants. And so the Jews who were faithful to him were truly his people. And that is true today if we look at God's spiritual remnant, the church. When Jesus prayed for his disciples, he prayed that God would not take them out of the world, even though they were of the world. God's people always live surrounded by those who are not his people. So it's totally impossible to separate the remnant of God's people from all the rest of the people of the world. So that would bring up the question of how then did that remnant people, those who are truly God's people, relate to the rest of their fellow Jews, and in a broader sense, to the rest of the world in which we live. And so that's what we want to do this morning, is to really look at that question and what distinguished God's people from the world in which they live. I believe that that can be applicable to us because we live in a world that is not subject to God. We are willfully rebellious against him, and that world surrounds us on every hand. And so we looked at that, and so let's look at a number of things. So the first thing I would point out is that as we look at the remnant and the world, we see that the remnant views life differently than the world. Even though they're in the world, they have a different perspective on what life is all about. That was true in physical Israel. There were those in physical Israel who were not spiritually faithful to God. They worshipped other gods. They violated the commands that God had given them. They faced the typical problems that human beings face with typically human solutions. In fact, that is one of the things which God's prophets pronounced judgment upon them for, was the fact that they tried to solve their problems man's ways rather than seeking the solution to their problems from God. The spiritually minded in the midst of that Israel were different. They did not necessarily accept, nor did they follow the generally accepted pathway of others. And I want to suggest to us this morning that essentially has never changed. Even though we live in a different age, we are now Christians living in a world that is characterized by self-desire and self-satisfaction, seeking what one wants for themselves. We have to view the world in which we live differently. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 4, Peter describes the reaction that will get. If we live in this world in a different way, we will have notice from that world in which we live, and they will view us in a way that they do not view each other. In 1 Peter 4, verse 4, Peter says, in all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. Now, Peter's talking to those who have been converted and are serving Christ, who used to be in the world, and he says, those people that you used to associate with, they will notice that you have changed. And they may even speak evil of you because you have changed. And some of you, I believe, have probably experienced this in your very lives. That perhaps before you became Christian, you had worldly friends, you were living in the world, and as you have grown as a Christian, you have ceased to do some of the things you used to do. And the old friends, they think that all of a sudden you think you're better than they are, that you think you don't approve of what they do. And the reaction to that can range from hatred to just ridicule, or perhaps even just ignoring you and acting like you no longer exist because you are no longer a part of them. That essential difference is that the remnant evaluates their life and their life choices by the consequence that might result to their relationship with God. Most people who live in this world view all of those choices and those things in terms of what it does for them or to them. In Ezra chapter 9, Ezra describes this. He's talking to people that are the remnant. These are the people that have been carried away captive by the Babylonians and have lived through the Persian domination. And they had been allowed to come back to Jerusalem. And coming back to Jerusalem, they were going to do a couple of things. They were going to rebuild God's temple and reinstitute the temple worship. They were going to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and thus basically resume the culture of the nation of Judah. And Ezra says to them in Ezra chapter 9 and verse 13, after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and our great guilt, since you our God, have requited us less than our iniquities deserve and given us an escaped remnant as this, shall we again break your commandments and intermarry with the people who committed these abominations? Would you not be angry with us to the point of destruction until there is no remnant nor any who escape? O Lord God of Israel, you are righteous, for we have been left as an escaped remnant. As it is this day, behold, we are before you in our guilt, for no one can stand before you because of this. So Ezra's message to this remnant was very clear. We suffered the punishment that our nation deserved for its unfaithfulness. And now we have been allowed by God to return to our homeland, to rebuild the temple, to rebuild the city of Jerusalem, to rebuild our lives and our nation. And his challenge is, should we just now go back and do the very same things that our ancestors did that resulted in the punishment that we have just suffered? And so what he is really appealing to that remnant to do is to make their life choices and to direct their lives in a way that will bring them in harmony with God rather than in a way that would cause God to take judgment upon them once again. And we can relate that to our lives as Christians, and particularly to the matter of our worldview. The remnant's worldview and the worldly view will create a tension between the remnant and those among whom they live. The focus is entirely different. God's people focus on Him. The people of the world focus on themselves. They seek that which pleases them. They do what they want to do, and they have no sense of obligation to submitting themselves to God at all. And as Christians in the 21st century, we recognize that we are that small group, and that calls for us to be distinctive from the world in which we live, and to seek God's purpose and His solutions in our lives. So it's the way the remnant looks upon the world in which they live. The second thing that characterizes the remnant as it lives in the world that is around them is that the word remnant does not depend on the world. Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 20, Isaiah says, "Now in that day, the remnant of Israel and those of the house of Jacob who have escaped will never again rely on the ones who struck them, but will truly rely on the Lord, the Holy One of Israel." Because God's people live in the midst of the world, there is the danger that they will lose their distinctive view of life. And when troubles come in life, that they will look to the worldly solutions to try to solve those problems. That had been the reaction. And that was what Isaiah was warning the people of the kingdom of Judah about. The northern kingdom had already been carried away in that Assyrian captivity, and the southern kingdom of Judah were progressing right along the same path. And as they began to feel threatened, first by Assyria and later by Babylon, there was a large number of the people of Judah that wanted to find the solution to that problem in worldly ways. There was a group that wanted to make an alliance with Egypt, hoping that Egypt would protect them. If you know the history of the world at that time, as the Babylonian Empire arose, there became friction between Babylon and Assyria. Babylon ultimately defeated the Assyrian Empire. But there were those who were trying to decide whose side should we take in this, thinking that choosing the right side in that conflict would bring them about the protection and the sense of safety that they needed. And so the world attaches values even today to things that give them some sense of security or stability. So we live in a world where people look at political powers and who you should be aligned with and who will provide protection for whom. They look at economic systems. There's a large number of people, even in our country, you know, that are beginning to question capitalism, say there's a better economic system, we'll have more stability and fairness if we adopt a different system. There's people who look to science and technology to be the answer to man's problems. They look to human wisdom. None of that is new. It was just in different degrees, but those were the kinds of things that the people of Judah were concerned about, which is, where will we be most prosperous? Where will we be most protected from war? And they sought those all in human solutions. The problem with all of that is those things are subject to change. And one of the prevalent things during Isaiah's time, the time Judah was allegiance with Egypt, and Isaiah had to tell him, "This is a broken reed. You're going to put all your confidence in them, and they won't be able to protect themselves, let alone to protect you." And so, history is an interesting teacher in that regard. Go back and look through the history, even of our country, and see who were our enemies and who were our allies at different stages of our history. You find out that some of the people who are enemies are now our allies. That changes. And so if you think the answer to the problems of modern life are found in political solutions or economic solutions, you may be disappointed. And the remnant understands that. To the extent that God's people adopt worldviews, their lives can be influenced by the world. The remnant does not gain strength by depending on the institutions of man. When you depend upon God, the external aspects of your life may be affected, but your faithfulness, which anchors your life, will never be changed. The remnant's life is based on that which endures. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 5, Isaiah exhorts the remnant of his day, and he says, "Then the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all flesh will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. A voice says, call out, and he answered, what shall I call out? All flesh is grass, and all its loveliness is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades. When the breath of the Lord blows upon it, surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever." That sounds an awful lot like what Peter says to the Christians in his day, doesn't it? Because that is truth that does not change. The world around us will change. Political powers will come and go. The powers that the people of Judah feared for their very life no longer exist and have for centuries. We think some of these things are permanent. But you know, our nation is a really old nation, 200 years in its current form. How much longer will it last? We feel fairly comfortable here, but if we put all our confidence in this nation and in this economic system and this political system, none of those things anchor us where we need to be anchored, which is in our faith in the Lord. And so, the remnant learns not to depend upon the world. We must live in the world. We are citizens of our country. We do our day-to-day living here, but our dependence needs to be upon the God that we carry us through, regardless of who the king is, who the world's power might happen to be. Well, a third thing that has to do with that relationship between the remnant and the world is the simple fact that the remnant needs to make its presence known to the world. Micah addresses that in his prophecy in Micah chapter 2, beginning in verse 12. He says, "I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like sheep in the fold, like a flock in the midst of its pasture. They will be noisy with men. The breaker goes up before them. They break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. So their king goes on before them and their Lord at their head." Micah says, well, the remnant is going to make a loud noise. One of the dangers that people of God have is that tendency to shrink back from being distinct, from being different, and to loudly proclaim that difference. And that's particularly true in our current social climate that emphasizes tolerance. In a social climate that is tolerant of everything except conviction, it can become a very easy thing to say, we just don't want to be noticed, and to shrink back from that. But the fact of the matter is what God says to Micah, to the children of Israel, is that the remnant is to be an influence of change. That change may not be favorable to the world, but it needs to be there anyway. I think of the way Paul's ministry was viewed by the people, some of the people in Thessalonica. You know, in Acts chapter 17 and verse 6, there was a conflict because the gospel was being preached, and there were some that opposed it. And we're told that they dragged Jason and some of the brethren before the city authorities. We have not experienced that in our lives and in our time, just for being Christian. But it happened then. And interestingly enough is the charge. These men who have upset the world have come here also. They've upset the world by proclaiming the gospel of Christ. They're trying to change things. And that very often is the accusation that happens. You're trying to make people change. Look, those people who have become very, very complacent in their sin and in the way things in the world is. I don't want to turn this into a political speech by any means, but I thought it was very interesting that our president the other day accused the people who are standing up for life as being the people trying to change society. When that has been the God-given norm for society, and even in Israel's day, you can have those sacrificed to the children. And yet, society becomes what it is, and then when you stand for the things that the Scriptures stand for, you're the one trying to cause the trouble. You're the one trying to change it. You're the one that can't be tolerated. Well, there's a very subtle type of pressure to say, I can't speak up because this will cause my friends not to like me. It will cause trouble at work. It will cause trouble in the neighborhood. It will cause trouble in the social club that I'm a part of. And the bottom line is that if you stand for what is right, and the remnant's job is to make that difference and to make the presence of God's will known, you will be accused as the one who's turning things upside down. But the fact remains, God's people are to make an impact for Him in the world in which they live. Again, Micah says in Micah 5 and verse 8, the remnant of Jacob will be among the nations, among many peoples, like a lion among the beasts of the forest, like a young lion among the flocks of sheep, which if he passes through, tramples down and tears, and there is none to rescue. Micah says we're to be the predator, not the prey. We're to be the ones effecting the change, because we are to make God's presence known. If you take that a step further, the remnant is supposed to have that impact on the world, and it's supposed to be a refreshing influence on the world. Again, Micah 5 verse 7 says, then the remnant of Jacob will be among many peoples like dew from the Lord, like showers on vegetation, which do not wait for man or delay for the sons of men. The refreshingness of a shower. How the rain refreshes things. The world has a way of hardening people. The world can beat them down. It can cause people to be cynical and selfish. It exposes people to everything that is wrong with mankind and leaves the impression that this is the way it has to be. That that's what is normal, to be that way. But God's people can be an influence on that. They view life differently, as we've already talked about. And when they live life differently with a concern for their fellow man, you remember the two great commandments involve loving God the way you should love God, but loving your fellow man the way you should. When you approach life that way and let that light shine so that you are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, that can make a refreshing change in the lives of people. You can lift up the downtrodden. You can help the poor. You can encourage the discouraged. And that's the role of God's people. And then the fifth thing that we would observe is that the remnant in doing that will be a blessing to others. Now, the world generally opposes the remnant. That's been the case. The church has been persecuted since it was established. But Jesus was persecuted prior to that. But despite that attitude of the world, the remnant's presence is a blessing to the world. The remnant can preserve those of the world. the Old Testament story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah makes the point that if there had just been 10 righteous souls in that city, those cities would have been saved. The influence of righteous people in an unrighteous world can be a great blessing. The conduct of a righteous man has beneficial effect on those who live about him. The remnant is composed of people who should be the best of neighbors, should be the best of citizens, should be the best families and friends and co-workers. Because you are the people living for God. That should be good. Good for you and good for others. So the focus of God's people should never be on trying to please the world in which we live. We should recognize that by being faithful to the God who made us, we can assert a saving influence on some in the world. And I dare say that there are not people in this audience this morning, as Christians, as God's people, who are here because another member of the remnant exhibited these characteristics of what we've just talked about. Jesus summed it up in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that you may, they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." And that is the mission of the remnant. To glorify our Father. May we all accept that challenge in our lives. So get your songbooks out as we close. We don't know the hearts of anyone in the audience this morning. And there may be one who is ready now to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. There may be one who needs